Everyone has their own unique views and needs when it comes to financial success. If you'd like to leave your financial woes behind and live a life of financial freedom, you've come to the right place. Welcome to the Saving with Steve Show, hosted by Steve Sexton. The show will help you with the ins and outs of money. We talk about financial issues that could be costing you thousands of dollars and keeping you up at night. We talk about money, tax reduction, saving more, spending less, 401ks, risk management, retirement, and everything under the sun that relates to you having a healthier, happy relationship with money. Now, here is your host of Saving with Steve, Steve Sexton.
Welcome to the Saving with Steve Show, where we talk about the ins and outs of money, pretty much everything under the sun that relates to you having a happier, healthy relationship with money. My name is Steve Sexton. Welcome to the show. I want to thank you all for listening, viewing, and I appreciate it all. Now I'd like to introduce you to Jen Donahoe. Jen's a U.S. Navy veteran, engineer, entrepreneur. She's a mentor. She spent her whole life working career in a man's world, obviously the military. Now she's encouraging women in leadership positions to take their own camouflage off, even if they're the only women in the room. Now, I want to just share this with everybody. There was a study done by KPMG. Incidentally, KPMG just hired my daughter as an intern in the accounting world. And I'm so thankful because they focus on helping people or women in the management ranks. And they did a study of people who were one or two levels below the C-suite and said, you know, how are you feeling? One of the big things that we saw there is they were concerned about the feelings for being an imposter, the only person in the room, all by themselves. You know, they felt more and more stressed as they accomplished more, and they felt like they had to work harder just because we're the only woman in the room. Jen's a specialist. She's lived it. Jen, welcome to the show. I think this is unbelievably important, whether somebody's a man or woman. Doesn't matter your ethnicity, because I think that, like I told you before, it doesn't matter your gender, your race, how old you are. I think it all adds to the workplace, and everybody should be valued. And I think everybody realizes it be valued. Now, before we get started, I just want to throw this out. Way back when our kids were little, my wife went to what's called MOPS, Mothers of Preschoolers, and she was freaking out about something the kids were doing. And my son would like to chew on crayons. So when she got there, she started talking to the other moms and found that everybody's eating crayons, so it wasn't something weird. So what I want to tell everybody is that you're not in this alone. You have people like Jen who can help you through it, who's been there. And to have that fellowship of women or men or people in your own ethnicity to say, hey, I'm dealing with this too. This is big. Jen, again, thank you for being here.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really looking forward to this.
All our listeners, they would love to hear your story. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
So I'm an ocean engineer from Texas A&M. Whenever I was about to graduate, I realized that I had all this angst. I had to go out and I had to see the world. I wasn't ready to just go down to Houston and start a job down there with the oil and gas industry. I had to get out and I had to see things. I looked at the different uniform services and found that the Navy was really the best fit for me. Now, going through the ocean engineering program, I was one of only two women in the program. So I was kind of getting used to being the only female in the room. It was usually like just me and Michelle. That was it, you know, the entire time. So whenever I got into the military, first off, there's not that many women in engineering and not that many women in engineering that also want to join the military. And so I was part of the Civil Engineer Corps. Even to this day, we're only about 9 to 10% women. I went to my very first command. So I was out in Guam and had just a fantastic time. If anybody's ever has a chance to go to Guam, they should. But it started there again. One of the only women in the room. Angie was the only other woman usually that was there. You know, it's my other friend. And through the ranks, it's just continued that way. Now, I've gone to Iraq, I've gone to Afghanistan, done expeditionary construction for the Marine Corps, kind of all over the world, just got used to being one of the only females in the room.
That's a great story, because a lot of people have lived that in their own corporate life. I like this statement that was made, and I think you made it. It says, female entrepreneurs, do you lean into the fact that you're a woman? And I think you should shed some light on that, because I think so many people are doing the fake it till you make it stuff, and it doesn't really work. I learned that early on because I was trying to be like the older guys, but I was like, that's not me. That doesn't work. I felt so stupid doing that. Help us understand that and what women can do.
There's a couple of different pieces that you talked about there. And one of them is if you're a female entrepreneur, do you really lean into that? And in talking to several of my other very competent friends, and I know through my own life, I had to scrap for what I got. You know, I felt like I had to work harder, I had to work longer than all of my other counterparts in order to get where I was. And what I found is that I put on this camouflage. You know, it doesn't really have anything to do with the military, but I've kind of realized that that's, I think, where it started, is that I felt like I needed to blend in. And so I didn't want to stand out as a female. They usually got too much of the wrong type of attention. And I just wanted to sort of blend in and do my job and just try to do it harder than everybody else. And so I got used to this. It's like, you know, I didn't want to stand out. And so now as an entrepreneur and owning my own company, the question came up, do I want to be a WBE, a woman business entrepreneur? Because my entire life I tried not to stand out. And now I'm being asked, should I do this? And I realized there's people out there that want to help us. And we don't have to take it as hard as we have. And so signing up to be a WBE or a WOSB, woman-owned small business, it's actually been really helpful. And it's something that I have realized is like, you know, this is the right thing to do, because people do want to help some of the disadvantaged folks that are out there. And it was really hard to try to get to that point. So maybe that's just me and my own stubborn pigheadedness. But that was one of the realizations that I finally came to, is that, oh, I do have to start to take off my camouflage and just be who I would really like to be.
And all too often people think to go to the next level, they have to be a certain way. And reality, what got them there is their own authentic self.
Oh, it's really true. I'm telling you, across the board, for a lot of people who are, one in the crowd, they've all kind of gone through this process. And once they realized that they had been putting on their camouflage to blend in, and they started to take off the camouflage, because everybody knew that, hey, you know, they are doing a really good job. They can stand on their own. They start to take off that camouflage. Now, all of a sudden, they're just skyrocketing. They're just soaring, because now they can be themselves. And that's really what I found through a lot of my counterparts. And it's not just females. It's actually some men that are in female-dominated, you know, organizations. You know, once they figured out, hey, I can, you know, sort of be myself, man, they're doing fantastic now.
How does somebody become a leader in a field that's still dominated by men? And how do we go about building women leaders for the next generation?
That's a great question. I think it all has to start with that groundbreaker. Once you get into a position where you're seen as a strong female leader, you have to realize that now there's other females that are looking up to you. That was one of those interesting realizations that I went through. And like, all of these younger females are now looking up to me. And basically they've told me, it's like, we now understand that we can achieve this. Because previously we'd only seen men in these positions. I taught at UC Berkeley, and I had women coming into my office all the time, just so glad that there was finally a female professor. That's what it takes. You know, you have to start that momentum. You have to have a couple of groundbreakers so that others are encouraged and motivated so that they can also go into those positions. And it's also incumbent, I think, also on women leaders as well, that we have to really look and we have to make a choice whenever we're looking at people who we're going to hire and put in different positions. And it really depends on that person that you're looking at. I'm not a firm believer in just grabbing a female because she's there. Look for the one who has the most fire and has the most drive. You know, maybe that's the person that looks like you at that time. And maybe you help them out in order to help their career as well.
In other words, finding a good mentor is wonderful. That is so key. Let's hold on a second, because I want to talk to you about the essential things you should be looking for in the right mentor if you're looking for that within the organization, Tourette. And I know you've been through that, and I know you've done an interview on it. So that's why I want to talk about it. So we're going to hold on right here. We got to take a break and pay some bills. So stick with us, and we'll be right back with more Jen.
More expert advice for having a happier relationship with money still to come on the Saving with Steve Show.
Don't let your financial woes keep you up at night and prevent you from living a life of financial and personal freedom. Hi, I'm Steve Sexton, host of the Saving with Steve Show. We're going to be talking about the ins and outs of money, those financial issues that could be costing you thousands of dollars, causing stress, keeping you up at night. We're going to talk about money, tax reductions, saving more, spending less, your investments, risk management, retirement, and everything associated with you having a healthier, happy relationship with money. So if you've ever dreamed of living a life of financial and personal freedom, you owe it to yourself and your family to tune into the Saving with Steve Show. Join me, Steve Sexton, on the Saving with Steve Show as we talk about everything under the sun when it comes to money. To learn more about the show, visit savingwithsteve.us. That's savingwithsteve.us. Savingwithsteve.us. We'll see you soon.
Welcome back to the show that is here to help you achieve your financial goals. It's the Saving with Steve Show. Now here's your host, Steve Sexton.
Hello, welcome back. I want to truly thank you for tuning in, and I appreciate you letting your friends and family and associates know about the show. All the replays are available at savingwithsteve.us. If you're enjoying the stories of helpful information and insight on Saving with Steve, I encourage you to subscribe to our YouTube channel so you never miss a show. And check out a few of our affiliates at UK Health Radio, BBS Radio, Talk Radio in New York City, E360 TV, and Las Vegas TV Network. All these networks are dedicated to empowering you to solve problems, uplift your spirit, live a life of financial and personal freedom. Also, follow us on Facebook and join the Saving with Steve Sexton Facebook page. And if you'd like to get replays, guest gifts, you can always go to the savingwithsteve.us. Now, we're back with Jen Donahue with Lessons from Leaderships. But what we are talking about right now, and I think it's unbelievably important, is to find the right mentor. What are the essential things that one should be looking for to finding that right mentor?
Great question. Just to let you know, I never had a mentor growing up, just because it really wasn't a thing at that time. And so I was a wild little thing. I was going all over the place. I was going to take on the world by myself. Nobody could tell me what to do. And man, I just made so many mistakes along the way. Whenever I got a little bit older, all of a sudden I had some people coming up and saying, hey, will you mentor me? And I'm like, I have no idea how to mentor you, because I was never had a mentor myself. So I started looking into it and trying to figure out, how do I be the best mentor that I could? And I thought, hey, you know what? I'm going to do something even crazier. I'm going to go get a mentor. Yeah, I was like in my late 30s, but it's like, hey, now's the right time. I'm going to try to figure out what this mentor thing is about. So I started looking around me, and I found a couple of different people. One of the things I found in my research was that don't have one mentor, have a board of directors, somebody who's good at different things. Maybe there's somebody who's technically very strong and they could really help you technically in your job. Maybe that's a great mentor to have. Maybe somebody's really good at business. Maybe somebody's good at finance. Maybe you have somebody who's really good at their family life that could be a good mentor. So I think it's really important to look at these different aspects of your life and think, where can I benefit the most at this time? You don't have to get them all at once, but maybe start to bring on your board of directors slowly as you realize what you need to be better at. So I have one that's technical, and he's been absolutely fantastic. And I just went up and I asked him, and I said, hey, would you be my mentor? And that's such a great honor, you know, to be asked that. And he had very, you know, strict stipulations. And he was like, okay, you're going to have to work really hard. I'm going to give you lots of homework, you know, but if you want to be my mentee, this is what you have to do. And that was fantastic. On the business side, I have a mentor as well, you know, very different personality, but I would say try out a couple of different people as mentors before you just lock into one, because it's really important. You're sharing, you know, your life with them and your fears and your weaknesses. And you have to have that professional relationship and personal relationship with them as you go forward. My last bit of advice is don't get somebody immediately within your chain of command. You might want to have your boss as your mentor, but I would probably recommend against that. Maybe find somebody else in the company. And the reason why is that, you know, they have some skin in the game as well. So maybe if you want to change careers, maybe they're not going to give you the best advice because you're the best person they have on the team. And so there's a conflict of interest there as well. So that's my one recommendation, is don't go for your immediate boss. Maybe look for somebody else within your sphere, but somebody that you feel comfortable with.
The main point that a lot of people don't think about when they have a mentor is they have a mentor run vertical, so to speak. And I think it makes a lot of sense to have multiple mentors, because I know I've had multiple mentors over the years in different areas that I was weak in. And I said, I need help here. I love the fact that you talk about having ground rules on both sides. A lot of people think that, hey, I should ask my boss to be a mentor. Well, you know what? They should be a coach anyways. They should be a leader. They should help you get to where you want to go. But having somebody different provides a different perspective. And I think that's wonderful. And when you're playing in the sandbox together, if you can do multiple things, you can do more in the sandbox, which is really important.
Right. Exactly.
When we talk about surviving and thriving through a crisis, do you have a process for this? I know you're an engineer. All engineers have a process. So I was wondering what yours is.
Yes, I learned this really in the military. So we're always ready for a crisis in the military. We're always practicing for a crisis. And I found whenever I was in industry, we really weren't practicing for crises very often. And really, it starts with the planning and sitting down and coming up with all of the different problems that could go wrong. And then thinking about what we call immediate action drills. Like if this goes wrong, this is what we're going to do. And we're going to practice that. And we're going to get the whole team together. So we're going to practice if this happens, this is what we're going to do. So for instance, if you're on a project and something goes terribly wrong, okay, what are your immediate actions? Instead of freaking out, which I know some people have a tendency to do, don't freak out because you have a little rule book there that says, this is what we do. I contact this person, I contact that person. And now your crisis isn't as bad because you're clicking through it and you know what you need to do and you know what your team needs to do as well. Now, if you're in the middle of a crisis and you'd never planned for it. So when you're in that type of crisis, as a leader, the one thing you really need to do is make sure that your team is doing what they need to do and that they have the resources and the care that they need. Because they're going through a crisis in addition to everything else that's going around them. And we have to make sure that as leaders, we're taking care of them. Yes, we need to have our eye on our long-term goals. But at the same time, we have to make sure that we're taking care of our people. Maybe they need a different computer. Maybe they need more time to get things done. Whatever that might be during that crisis, make sure that you're taking care of your team. They'll take care of you and you'll get through it. And then the last piece of this whole thing is that you have to debrief at the end. So many of us, whenever we're out of the crisis, we just want to look forward and just go. And we don't want to think about it. But there's so much that can be done with the debrief. What did we do well? What should we improve upon? What could make us more efficient? Maybe there was something that we found during this crisis that if we did this, we're more efficient in the long run. So just take some time to just debrief first before you start to go forward, because then you're ready for the next crisis, because it's all cyclical.
No, I agree, because I've seen so many people freak out over stuff that they didn't need to freak out over. Part of this just had to do is being calm and understanding, okay, here's where you're at. Where do we have to go? What do we need to do? And I like the fact that you say, take care. There's obviously expectations, but it's a crisis and things are new. You still need to set high expectations so people can rise to the cause. I think that's a great message that people can resonate and say, okay, I can do this. And I remember the mayor of New York City during 9/11 says, one thing I learned is just be the calmest guy in the room and then do exactly what you just said. Everybody's going to be in a situation. Like, for example, my daughter's going into KPMG. A lot of companies like that, when you walk in the door, whether to be an intern or a new employee, they're going to put you through the hell month or two or three. They're going to have large, lofty expectations. They're going to push you and you're going to have to learn and you're going to have to develop and grow. Otherwise, you're probably not going to be there. Whether it's men or women, how do you deal with the pressures of high performance expectations?
First off, whenever you go there, hopefully you know that those are the expectations that you're going to have to live up to. And then mentally prepare. You might have to be working really long hours in order to meet those goals. You know, go in and study and study and study and study and work really, really hard, you know, during that first startup period, because not only is that going to get you ahead of the curve because you are studying, you are working, you know, so hard, people will see that you were invested. And there's going to be a time where they start to sort of slacken off a little bit on that because they're testing you. But you have to go in, you know, with that idea. You know, it's just like going through boot camp or any type of other training. You know that that's what you're going into. So again, you know, study as much as you can, work as hard as you can, and establish yourself as that go-to person.
So one of the things I do want to chat about is when I was first working in the 80s, yes, people yelled and stuff like that. And they you know, got away from them and moved off and all that stuff. So what would be the advice if you feel the tendency to want to yell or scream or get upset at people?
Go home and yell into a pillow. My first opportunity to lead people, I didn't know what I was doing. And I looked at the leaders above me, just like you were talking about, and they were yellers. And so I thought, oh, I guess this is how you lead people. And so I went in and I yelled at my people and it felt horrible. I mean, it's one of those things where that was like 26 years ago and I still regret doing it because that really wasn't who I was. And so my advice for folks, if they feel like they have to be yellers, you know, maybe that is their personality, but don't fake it just because you think that that's what you're supposed to do. Understand who you are as a leader, and maybe you're a compassionate leader. Maybe you're a selfless leader. You know, maybe you are a yeller. And if you are a yeller, I would highly recommend that, you know, you don't yell at your people because that doesn't do good for anybody. You know, they're going to completely shut off. I saw this happen just actually a couple of weeks ago where somebody yelled at somebody else and you could just see a wall went right up and nothing they were saying was getting through. You know, the person felt awful on the other side. And so it wasn't effective whatsoever. So I would definitely say, don't yell at your people and don't feel like you have to yell at your people just because you think that's what leaders are supposed to do.
Jen, I want to thank you for being on the show today. I know you're a public speaker. I know you're a mentor and entrepreneur. How can people connect with you to follow you, to get help if they need help, or just be part of the girls group?
I can be reached at jendonahue.com. So that's Jen with two N's, D-O-N-A-H-U-E. I can also be found on LinkedIn at Jen Donahue and on Twitter at Jen Donahue and on Instagram at I am Jen Donahue. Are you seeing a pattern? So if you just, Google Jen Donahue, you'll find me.
Jen, thank you so much. I love what you're doing. You're spearheading what women have a place to go to know somebody's been through it. I think that's wonderful. I've already sent your stuff to my daughter and she's like, oh my God, I love this girl. So thanks again for being with us today, sharing your knowledge. I wish you the most success and stay happy, stay healthy.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
More expert advice for having a happier relationship with money still to come on the Saving with Steve Show.
Don't let your financial woes keep you up at night and prevent you from living a life of financial and personal freedom. Hi, I'm Steve Sexton, host of the Saving with Steve Show. We're going to be talking about the ins and outs of money, those financial issues that could be costing you thousands of dollars, causing stress, keeping you up at night. We're going to talk about money, tax reductions, saving more, spending less, your investments, risk management, retirement, and everything associated with you having a healthier, happy relationship with money. So if you've ever dreamed of living a life of financial and personal freedom, you owe it to yourself and your family to tune into the Saving with Steve Show. Join me, Steve Sexton, on the Saving with Steve Show as we talk about everything under the sun when it comes to money. To learn more about the show, visit savingwithsteve.us. That's savingwithsteve.us, savingwithsteve.us. We'll see you soon.
Welcome back to the show that is here to help you achieve your financial goals. It's the Saving with Steve Show. Now here's your host, Steve Sexton.
Hello, welcome back to Saving with Steve. This is Steve Sexton. That was Jen Donahoe. She was talking about how women can perform in the workplace, and she's helping us through it with all of our coaching and mentoring techniques. It was wonderful. I hope you pass this interview on to your daughters, to the friends that you know that might be struggling or looking for help or just somebody to connect with in the workplace. You know, I think that was wonderful. So now I'd like to just talk to you about the three main risks in retirement income. When it comes to retirement, there are three areas families need to think about to protect their assets. With people living longer on an average of 65 for men, 63 for females, it's important to address these risks in your retirement and legacy planning. First of all, it's the sequence of return. One of the fundamental pieces of retirement planning is to have a plan for income. This is where you use the three-legged stool. A retirement income plan comes into play with Social Security, pensions, and personal savings. There are also issues when you approach this. Few people have a pension, and there are questions about the solvency of Social Security. That puts even more of a burden on personal savings and assets to fund your retirement. We rely on personal savings. If the market dips right as you're about to retire or shortly thereafter, the sequence of returns or the sequence of return risk could have a negative effect on your retirement because you'll not have the time to rebound if you're drawing off those assets. This is why people came up with the rule of 100. Basically, what you do, you take your age, subtract how old you are, say if you're 65, 35 left over, and that's how much you have at risk in the market, and the other 65% in safer investments. Now, let's look at market risk, the second risk. Most people near retirement remember the downturn of 2002 and 2008. Those were tough years in the market. If you worked your whole life and the market crashed, it's a detrimental effect on your income. You've worked hard and now you're near retirement. You probably don't want to see half your life savings wiped out by the downturn of the market. This is where understanding the difference investment tools and how they work can help you protect against market risk. An investment can only have two of the following three characteristics. Remember this, folks. Investments can have growth, safety, and liquidity. For example, you had a bank, you have checking, savings, as a money market. The money market's safe. Your assets aren't going to go down. It's also liquid. You can pull the money out anytime, but there's really no growth potential. Right now, you probably get a money market or a savings account at 0.1. Quite frankly, if you have one of those, you're losing money safely due to purchasing power. But if you need the money for next 3-6 months, that's what you have that for. Now, on the flip side, you have money in the market. It has the potential for growth. It's liquid. Hey, everybody likes that. But there's no guarantee of safety, which people don't like. When investing in the market, you can have conservative, moderate, or aggressive portfolios. For the liquidity and growth potential, money in the market, you have to give up the guarantee of safety. Everyone with a conservative, safe portfolio, there's still a chance you could lose money. Just ask anyone who has money in the markets in 2008 because their 401k affectionately turned into a 201k. In fact, I was doing a presentation back in 2008, just after the crash, to a number of lawyers. And one says, I hate you financial people because I tell you I don't want to lose any money and I still lose money. And then I have to explain to him the three worlds of investing. The third leg of investment triangle is the tools that offer the potential for growth with guarantees of safety. These guarantees of safety come with either bank or insurance companies. To trade off there, it has to be a little bit of sacrifice on the liquidity side. And these investment tools could be things like certificates of deposits. They could be multi-year guaranteed annuities. They could be fixed index annuities, index universal life insurance. Often an individual gets older and closer to retirement, they move more money to the safety from the growth side, hence the rule of 100. So let's talk about the third risk. It's the risk of longevity. Life expectancy in the US is roughly 79 years old. Given that, it's important to make sure your income and retirement will last as long as you do, which is the number one concern for retirees. This is why developing an income plan also involves developing an investment plan to bring these two concepts together to fight against longevity and ultimately bankrupting your personal savings. In the past, individuals could just rely on their Social Security and pensions, which is also guaranteed income for life. However, these days, fewer and fewer people have pensions, and Social Security by itself will not even cover most retirees' monthly expenses. This is where having an income plan comes into play. And the income plan needs to take into account that people are living longer. There are two strategies to protect against longevity risk and ensure that income will last as long as you do. First, there are options to create additional income streams through fixed index annuities and index universal life insurance, where the assets can be turned into income streams for life. A second way is to rely on drawing down assets such in a way to protect the sequence of returns. In other words, you want to structure some assets in a growth bucket and in a safe bucket. And basically what you're doing here is you're withdrawing your income from the growth bucket when the growth bucket is growing. You have a safe bucket you're allowing to grow. When the growth bucket stops growing or goes negative because the market retreats, you take your income from the safety bucket and then allow your growth bucket to recover. And then when it starts growing again, you start withdrawing your assets from there. By doing so, you could put yourself in a position where 20 years down the line, you can have $200,000 more, $300,000, $500,000 more. Let me put that in real context. Hey, if you started with the $700,000 and looked at the sequence of withdrawals from a growth bucket and a safe bucket and took money out when the growth bucket was growing and the safe bucket when the growth bucket wasn't growing, you can end up with 25% more in 20 years, as much as 40% more assets in 20 years. You've worked hard for what you have. It's important to consider strategies to protect and preserve that nest egg. This is where creating an income and investment plan that can protect against sequence of returns, market risk, longevity risk come into play. And there's one other thing that you probably want to look into that. You want to protect against tax risk. We all know, based off current administration, that taxes are likely to move up in the future. So taxes can be detrimental to a retirement plan. So it's very important that you look at dealing with that tax risk and be very efficient when it comes to your tax planning. By doing so, you can experience more clarity, confidence, and comfort as you move into that dream retirement. So please keep that in mind. Make sure you're having those discussions with your financial advisors, because the reality is a more confident retiree is done through education. And the more education you can get by understanding and getting clarity on those, that return risk, that market risk, that longevity risk, and how it affects you will make a difference in your life. Hey, I want to thank you all for joining us today on Saving with Steve. We talked with Jen Donahoe. She was outstanding. She's helping women in the workplace. And just know there are other people out there, whether you're male or female, that can help you get through the things that you're thinking about so you don't feel like an imposter, so you're not doing things that don't present you as the authentic you, because doing that will give you more money, make you more successful, and give you a brighter life. Now, next week, we have some really awesome stuff to talk to you about. So with that, I want to thank you all for joining us today. My name is Steve Sexton, and this is the Saving with Steve Show. We'll look forward to seeing you next week. Be safe, be healthy. Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining us for the Saving with Steve Show, hosted by Steve Sexton. To learn more about the show and how to become a guest or sponsor, visit savingwithsteve.us. That's savingwithsteve.us. Join us again next time as we continue to talk about everything under the sun that relates to you having a healthier, happier relationship with money. This has been the Saving with Steve Show, hosted by Steve Sexton. Everyone has their own unique views and needs when it comes to financial success. If you'd like to leave your financial woes behind and live a life of financial freedom, you've come to the right place. Welcome to the Saving with Steve Show, hosted by Steve Sexton. The show will help you with the ins and outs of money. We talk about financial issues that could be costing you thousands of dollars and keeping you up at night. We talk about money, tax reduction, saving more, spending less, 401ks, risk management, retirement, and everything under the sun that relates to you having a healthier, happy relationship with money. Now, here is your host of Saving with Steve, Steve Sexton.
Hello, welcome to the Saving with Steve Show. We're talking about the ins and outs of money, pretty much everything under the sun that relates to you having a happier, healthy relationship with money. My name is Steve Sexton. I do want to thank you for joining us today. Thank you for sharing with your friends and families. Our audience keeps growing here nationally as well as internationally, and we're so grateful that you're sharing us with your friends and family, as well as your associates. You can always check us out on YouTube, Facebook at Saving with Steve Sexton. We've got something a little different for you today. What would you do if you discovered a hidden interdimensional portal within the Library of Congress? And that a massive database of all the knowledge and records of all people is controlled by a secret society that uses that information to manipulate humanity. Oh, wow. This is a fast-paced, very well-written book by author Kathy Forte. Real interesting. She's a former clinical psychologist, journalist. She had a mysterious issue with health, and it's created this very creative capacity for her, and it just translated in this book, and it's wonderful. We're going to talk about a number of different things there. But before we do that, I need to start talking with you about the next economic storm to come and what to do. Now, one of the big things about this, and we've been talking for a little bit about economic storms and not fear-mongering here, but I think it's important that each and everybody understand what's coming down and what's happening, so they can shield themselves against these possible storms. Previously, we spoke about things like the supply chain issues with COVID, the global conflict with Russia and Ukraine, inflation, the impact of the Federal Reserve raising interest rates on the economy with unemployment, lower corporate earnings, the banking issues. And just a couple of weeks ago, we had OPEC and Russia cutting oil production. Now we're going to see the increase in inflation when it comes to anything related to oil in our economy. And I want you to keep your eye on the commercial real estate market. The New York Post put out this article. It says, and you're thinking to yourself, well, why? The clock is ticking on this $20 trillion debt bomb. We know the pandemic changed the landscape for commercial real estate. With work changing habits, with people working at home, people do not want to return to the office. Valuations and prices in the commercial markets have been badly distorted by the Fed, both indirectly via the massive credit bubble created between 20 and 22, and directly by the Fed offering to buy commercial mortgage-backed securities. This is literally has created a perfect storm for the commercial real estate sector. And let's not forget how much of the asset class is financed by $1 trillion in debt, and the debt is coming due. The New York Post notes that $1.5 trillion worth of commercial real estate comes due by the end of 2025, 2 years from now. Now, keep in mind where rates gone since the debt was issued. They've gone way up. But last but not least, who is the biggest lender to these commercial real estate developers? It's regional banks. I keep talking about the financial storms brewing, and each one becomes more and more powerful. This isn't fear-mongering. Janet Yellen actually testified in front of this. It's in the New York Post, the Wall Street Journal. I'm just sharing some facts with you to help you, our clients, to shield themselves against these possible storms. You really want to take a look at this and say, hey, I got to watch myself here. I got to be cautious, because sooner or later, this pressure on the storm is going to get to a point where it pushes the market down further and further. And we could see possible more storms in the financial markets. Markets still overvalued, according to B of A, Wall Street Journal, Morgan Stanley, Chase, the whole shot. So you really got to pay attention to what's going on here and proceed with caution. What I'd like to do is take a quick break. We're going to be right back in a few moments with more Saving with Steve.
More expert advice for having a happier relationship with money still to come on the Saving with Steve show.
Don't let your financial woes keep you up at night and prevent you from living a life of financial and personal freedom. Hi, I'm Steve Sexton, host of the Saving with Steve show. We're going to be talking about the ins and outs of money, those financial issues that could be costing you thousands of dollars, causing stress, keeping you up at night. We're going to talk about money, tax reductions, saving more, spending less, your investments, risk management, retirement, and everything associated with you having a healthier, happy relationship with money. So if you've ever dreamed of living a life of financial and personal freedom, you owe it to yourself and your family to tune into the Saving with Steve show. Join me, Steve Sexton, on the Saving with Steve show as we talk about everything under the sun when it comes to money. To learn more about the show, visit savingwithsteve.us. That's savingwithsteve.us, savingwithsteve.us. We'll see you soon.
Welcome back to the show that is here to help you achieve your financial goals. It's the Saving with Steve show. Now here's your host, Steve Sexton.
Hello, welcome back to the Saving with Steve show, where we talk about the ins and outs of money. But today we're not really talking about the ins and outs of money. As I told you before, we have this wonderful author, Kathy Forte. She's got this wonderful book called Stacks, The Library of Truth. I just want to introduce you first, Kathy. I'm so excited. So I'm sorry. Everybody, this is Kathy Forte. She's actually a former clinical psychologist. She's a journalist. She got the creative bug after suffering a near-death experience. I'd like to just start with that, and then we can start rolling into the book and go from questions from there.
Well, thanks, Steve. I have to say, I didn't plan on writing sci-fi. It's like my life has been a sci-fi novel. So I could have probably just been happy with that. But back in 2003, I was a clinical psychologist practicing for about 30 years or so. And in Los Angeles, and I was coming home from work and I had this strange feeling come over me. The next minute when I got home, I was propelled into this tunnel. Now, my heart had stopped, but I didn't know that. And first thing I saw was myself propelled into this tunnel, feet first, traveling at a high rate of speed, and I could see light at the end of the tunnel. And immediately I thought, oh, is this the tunnel everybody's been talking about? And if so, when did I die? I wasn't sick. And, you know, your next thought, well, is if I'm dead, there's not much I can do about it. Now let's go see what it's all about. And all these thoughts are going through your head fast, but they stopped me before I could go into the light. I actually tried to will myself to go into that light. It was just in a holding space. And I remember thinking, well, this is boring. And the next minute, all of this energy poured into me, spun me back around, sent me back through the tunnel, same way, horizontal feet first. And I was back in my physical body. And my whole left side was paralyzed and I couldn't move. But I was hearing voices in my head. Now, not a good thing to hear when you're a psychologist. And these voices were saying, relax, Kathy, everything will be okay. Just breathe easy. And I could feel whoever these voices were, I could feel clicking in my body as they were reconnecting my physical body to my soul, body, whatever you want to call it. after a little bit, I had movement again back in my body. You know, I just listened to what they said because there was no one else there with me. I did have a cup of tea that had spilled all over me during the process. I felt this heavy pressure in my chest and I thought, I'm going to have to go see a cardiologist. And they said, don't worry about it. Everything will be fine. But within 24 hours after coming back from this experience, which I didn't know what this was all about, you know, but they did tell me they were trying to get me to breathe back life in my physical body. And I was suddenly obsessed with quantum physics after that. I was understanding things on the computer I hadn't understood before. I was getting all this information coming through. I landed up inventing some software based on mathematical algorithms, because before this, I was a math dummy, but all this came through. And it's a kind of a long story, but people wanted to read it. They can read it about my book, Fractals of God, A Psychologist's Near-Death Experience and Journeys into the Mystical. What it did, to get to your point, was it tripped kind of a psychic, very strong intuitive link in me. Besides inventing this software, which is all over the world, it's a holistic software called Trinfinity 8 and Ascension 11, I started to have incredible dreams. And one of the dreams, like I'd have to say, I had a dream, you know, and the dream was I woke up in the middle of the night and I had the whole plot to Stack's Library of Truth in my head. And I could not go back to sleep until I started writing it. I thought, oh, this would make a great movie. And of course, I lived in LA and I knew script writers. And so a friend of mine was a pilot writing. I started his class with the idea in mind. And it was right around the time of the writer's strike back then. But it won Best Original Screenplay accommodations for Slam Dance. And then I just kind of put it aside. And then when COVID happened, I thought, that UCLA professor told me, you know, this should be made into a book. And I'm thinking, I don't really know if I can do it justice, but I sat down and I started writing and the rabbit hole just kept getting deeper and deeper. And it turned into a trilogy series. To just say quick elevator speech on what the plot is, it's about a new librarian who discovers an interdimensional portal in the Library of Congress that leads to a library of truth, where all the facts are kept on everyone and everyone since the beginning of time. And of course, you know, there's always going to be a conflict. There's going to be some bad guys who are trying to manipulate it for the world, for power, greed, and so forth like that. So I had fun with this book. I thought it was only going to be one book. And like I said, it turned into three books because the characters just kept evolving. It was a fun ride.
When I started reading it, it starts out where head librarian of the Library of Congress, he hung himself at his desk. You paint the picture of the chief detective walking in from your writing. You could see the emotion on his face, how he's walking in, how he's looking at things, how he's got that pissed off snarl and way he's going to command everything. And then you introduce the main character, Zax. He's a savant raised by the nannies because the congressman or the senator. Now he's in the middle of this and it just goes one thing to the next. It's almost like a cool action movie that just keeps going. And I was telling you this before we even started. It's like, I don't know about anybody listening, but in my family, we call it book mode, where you really get into the book. If you really get into the book, you can have it done in a day. And if it's during the week, because you got to work, it's usually 2 or 3 days. And this is one of those books. I know there's a second one, and I'll probably read the first one and go, if it's anything like the first one, I'm going for the second one. And now you spell there's a third. So
third one comes out in about 2 weeks or so. I had some people say, one woman wrote to me, she goes, I canceled a dinner party because I had to finish the book.
Oh, yeah.
Wow. But, you know, I've always been told a plot that's really strong character driven. And because I was a psychologist, I was, you know, privy to a lot of unusual psychopathology. And I wanted my characters to be realistic, have foibles and had things that they had to overcome. They weren't perfect. You know, would they evolve and develop over this? The main character, as you know, already alluded to, has acquired savant syndrome. This is because he had a baseball injury at the age of 7 and his brain got rewired a different way. And it caused him to also have synesthesia. So he sees the world in numbers. He would see you and me in numbers. He would see a slice of pizza in numbers. He would see, and you know, it's a blessing and a curse. And it really does help him to release this information in the Library of Truth and get it out there in the world without getting caught and without getting killed. And of course, he develops a deep throat television reporter. You know, I'm starting to see things in the plot that have already started to come true after I wrote this book. So people are saying, are you sure this is a sci-fi book? Are you sure? Or is this really a nonfiction fiction book? And maybe they should have a new category for books, because people are saying, you know, that character kind of reminds me of this person. And I have a disclaimer up front, you know, any coincidences or resemblance to living or dead people, I'm not saying.
This is for your entertainment purposes only.
Only, right.
Oh, I've got to ask this. One of the big questions is your book a warning about big technology companies that acquire a trove of data on everything and everyone? Because there's a new series called Rabbit Hole with Kiefer Sutherland. I started reading this. I'm like, oh my God, everybody gets into conspiracy theory stuff. And they start going, well, Facebook's got this. Amazon's got this. They've already figured out if you're going to buy, when you're going to buy, how you're going to buy. They might even know your spouse better than you do. That's where that question comes from.
It is a big warning. And the problem is the more that truth comes out, the more fear about that truth being revealed, and the more people will try to censor that. So it creates a whole nother dilemma about freedom of speech and everything else. But yes, too much information in the hands of the wrong people is a perfect place for bribery and to get them to do what you want. And I mean, you know, I think we live in a world where we're starting to see some of the conspiracy theorists are turning into prophets. And we're running out of conspiracy theories.
Yeah, that's a bit of a problem. Hey, please stick with us. We got more Kathy Forte. We'll be right back with more Saving with Steve.
More expert advice for having a happier relationship with money still to come on the Saving with Steve show.
Don't let your financial woes keep you up at night and prevent you from living a life of financial and personal freedom. Hi, I'm Steve Sexton, host of the Saving with Steve show. We're going to be talking about the ins and outs of money, those financial issues that could be costing you thousands of dollars, causing stress, keeping you up at night. We're going to talk about money, tax reductions, saving more, spending less, your investments, risk management, retirement, and everything associated with you having a healthier, happy relationship with money. So if you've ever dreamed of living a life of financial and personal freedom, you owe it to yourself and your family to tune into the Saving with Steve show. Join me, Steve Sexton, on the Saving with Steve show as we talk about everything under the sun when it comes to money. To learn more about the show, visit savingwithsteve.us. That's savingwithsteve.us, savingwithsteve.us. We'll see you soon.
Welcome back to the show that is here to help you achieve your financial goals. It's the Saving with Steve show. Now here's your host, Steve Sexton.
Welcome back to the Saving with Steve show, where we talk about the ins and outs of money. Pretty much everything under the sun relates to you having a happy, healthy relationship with money. I want to truly thank you for tuning in. I appreciate you letting your friends and family and associates know about the show. All the replays are available at savingwithsteve.us. If you're enjoying the stories of helpful information or insight, or just want to learn more about Kathy, I encourage you to subscribe to our YouTube channel, Google Play. Please check us out on our affiliates at UK Health Radio, BBS Radio 24/7, Talk Radio New York City. All these networkers are dedicated to empowering you to solve problems, uplift your spirit, and live a life of personal and financial freedom. And yes, you can always go see behind the scenes guest gifts at Saving with Steve Sexton Facebook. So we're back with Kathy. One of the big things when we start talking about the conspiracy theories is how the news media and libraries play a vital role in the truths that we hear.
I call this personally the age of discernment. So if you're just getting your news from one source or one-sided source, you're not getting a full picture. Before I became a psychologist, I worked for CBS News in New York. That was a whole different journalistic day. We always had to include both sides of the story in anything we wrote. We're not really seeing that today. We really need to get our stuff from different sources. And that's what I encourage people to do, because and everything sometimes is slanted. So you have to sift the wheat from the chaff, what resonates with you. And then sometimes you have to go outside your comfort zone and explore another way of looking at it, you know, and you might find a different truth there that not open to at the time. You know, we can't say that 20 years ago, I'm still going to have the same beliefs as I did when I was 18 years old. Of course not. We evolve and we change the more information we have, and then we analyze it and find out that, you know, I back then I used to watch full clips of things. And now we see a little tiny clip of something, but if they played maybe 30 seconds more, you would find out that they said something totally different, you know? Mm-hmm.
Those sound bites are very interesting. I've actually worked and lived all over the world, and it's very interesting the slant that you see from different parts of the world. For example, right after the Rodney King riots, I was actually working and developing businesses in England, and they actually thought we had a civil war. That was their slant. Wow. And they thought America was falling apart, starting in California. Very, very interesting. Even working in the South and Florida and places like that, one of the people who worked for me was a former school teacher, and he's actually from California, and we're in Florida, and he's going, oh yeah, even the history books down here have a different slant about what happened during the Civil War.
And well, the victors write the history, and it may not be the accurate history. Much of our history has been lost, mm-hmm. You know, or rewritten or hidden or whatever. Yeah.
And you know what? We see that happen little by little every single day in front of our eyes. So it's just very, very interesting. People should know about that. Now, one of the things that everybody asks is the challenges every whistleblower must confront. So shed some light on that, because we've heard about these whistleblowers throughout times, but I you know what? I think that's really, really tough for somebody to do, especially on a national stage.
Yeah, it takes a lot of courage, and you have to be willing to take the slings and arrows that are going to be thrown at you. Many who have been ruined financially, have been ruined reputationally, and you know, have been targets for you know, people out there who are unstable and may want to get rid of them. So I think a lot of people think twice, maybe more than twice. Do I really want to ruin my life by revealing the truth? And, you know, right now in the news, I guess the intelligence agencies and the Pentagon are wondering who's leaking all this information out there. And I'm thinking, oh, it's like a Zach character. He's whoever it is. He's getting that information out, and they can't find out who it is, and it's driving them crazy because they're finding out what these leaders are really saying behind the scenes that we are not privy to, and we only get one side of the picture. Mm-hmm. So, whistleblowers, it takes a courageous person to do that. So you can do it in my books, fictional books. You know, some people said, oh, I read your books and I feel like I can accomplish justice in a world that I don't feel like there's justice right now, you know?
Okay, so we're going to play what if real quick here. What would happen if this type of library was in place?
Who's to say it isn't? I had a client once, and she also had a near-death experience, and she came back and she said, I went to this place where you could read up on everything. And she said, and it was very truthful too. And that's when I said, oh, kind of like a library of truth. And that stuck in my head. Now, if you go back through some of the ancient texts, they talk about something called the Akashic Records. And, you know, that there's some place that all information is stored. You know, what dimension it's in, if it's there, I don't know. But perhaps somebody in holographic form, like in my books, in my library of truth, everything is shown in holographic form. You could step into it. You can't interfere with it, but you can step into it and see what's really going on. And, you know, I kind of like to think maybe there really is a place like that. But what do we know? This on our third dimension here, we know so little about really life and you know, why we're all here and so forth like that. So we can't really dismiss everything outright as being, oh, that's sci-fi.
Well, I'll say this. I think it's more fun talking about it and thinking it something possibly could be there. But quite frankly, if I really knew about that, I'd be really freaked out. and quite frankly, for your book, it is just a cool, wild ride. And that's as far as it wants to go for me.
So, well, everybody, like I said, it reads like a movie. And that's kind of, I'm very visual. So I wanted it to be fast action paced. And, you know, character development and go, you know, it's not like James Michener's books where you got 10 pages describing Hawaii, you know.
Yeah. Or, what's that? Tom Clancy's. You got 200 pages before you get the characters. yes. So, I'll just say this. I think in reading as far as I've gotten, and we like to watch the little series that are maybe 5 or 6, 7 series long and or episodes or so on long or 10 episodes or whatever. I think it would make a wonderful series like that, where somebody go from one to the next, and it would be really, really fun just to binge it, because it would be one of those things where I know my daughter would just not stop.
Well, if any of you, any of your listeners or viewers are Hollywood producers or... Come talk to me. I know it's going to be produced. I just don't know by who yet.
Okay. Well, you know what? I'm the wrong guy to do that, because you know what? I got told too many years ago that I had to face for radio. So what the heck? just kidding. Now, and my apologies to everybody. Got some sinus issues due to the pollen out here in California. Let's see. Now, you know what? One of the things I did notice is that you've done a lot of traveling and got to see things people haven't. And it relates to an experience I had when we only have about a minute and a half left. But when I was in England, one of the people I worked for, his name is Jeff Zients, and he's one of those people who had a lot of money. And he liked to get the private concierge, the same people that would tour around the dignitaries and stuff like that. So we went to King Henry VIII's palace, Hampton Court Palace. And he took us behind the brick walls, and like nobody really gets to see, which was very, very, very cool how they could walk down on this as opposed to all over the darn castle. And this is that castle that has that maze. And I thought it was very, very cool. So when you're talking about your experience in Egypt with the Great Pyramids and, you know, where the water tunnels are and stuff like that, could you tell our audience a little bit about that?
Well, I had an experience in the King's Chamber with three other people there, and I got out of my body and I went down into the depths of the Great Pyramid, which surprised me, and I saw water tunnels down there. And I actually went even deeper and I saw what looked like a city. And so my Egyptologist, I've been leading groups there to Egypt for a number of years. And I talked to him and I said, I don't know how you're going to do it, but you need to talk with the head of the Giza Plateau or the antiquities. I need to get down there. And they kept saying no, they kept coming back, but he was persistent. And he said, okay, this is the price to do it. And they told me the price. And I said, oh my God, I would have paid double that to do this, you know? So I did. So it was like 4 a.m. in the morning, you know, walking over the Giza Plateau in the dark and opening this kind of brass iron door. And it went down 150 feet. There was 3 levels. And the second level was lots of niches of sarcophaguses that were empty. Only 2 were still there. And the third one was the water was still lapping around the rings of the ladder, but there was a sarcophagus buried under the water and had writing on it. And the Giza, I said, has anyone ever opened this? And they said, no. And I'm thinking, oh, this is interesting. So, you know, I just kind of went inside and asked my intuitive guidance. They said, well, it's actually hermetically sealed. It's actually somewhat of a portal. And so I wove that into my Stacks Library of Truth book as well. I took water samples while I was down there, had them analyzed. It showed that it was salty water. Now, the Nile River is about 5 miles away now because of the Aswan Dam has redirected it. And that's fresh water, not salty water. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it took a while to track down where the source of the salt was coming from. And I was asked to talk, you know, about my findings at pyramid conferences and things like that. But I found that there's water tunnels under most all the major pyramids in the world, Teotihuacan, Chichen Itza, the Bosnian pyramid. So there's something there that they're not talking us about. I think that it may have been, you know, it's where there's water, there's usually hydroelectric energy. And so I think that they built on this, and there was probably a lot of stuff we don't know about the Egyptians. The Egyptians say, oh, only goes back 4,000 years, but they wink at that because after they found Göbekli Tepe, they found that that goes back 10,000 more years. So we know most of that history of human history has been lost.
Kathy, this has been wonderful. I want to thank you for being part of our show today. This is a great change of pace for us. And I know our listeners are going to love it. Do me a favor, just share everybody where they can go get your book. And
You can get it on Amazon in ebook or print, and it's available in Audible there too. Barnes & Noble also has it. You can also go to the StaxLibraryOfTruth.com website for more information and on my adventures as well. And, you know, I've blogged about Egypt for a number of years. And like I said, my life reads like a sci-fi novel.
Look, Kathy, thank you so much for being here. And you know what? Maybe we'll have you back in the future to talk about the next book.
Will do.
Thanks, Steve. Stay safe, stay healthy. Everybody, that's it for today here on Saving with Steve. Stay safe, stay healthy. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining us for the Saving with Steve show, hosted by Steve Sexton. To learn more about the show and how to become a guest or sponsor, visit savingwithsteve.us. That's savingwithsteve.us. Join us again next time as we continue to talk about everything under the sun that relates to you having a healthier, happier relationship with money. This has been the Saving with Steve show, hosted by Steve Sexton.